one of my mentors shared made, you know, the sermon really is one description read. That's the real sermon. Because that's the truth. And then me here as pastor is trying to do my best to stick with Jesus and to unpack that, to help us. What is that? Understand that, see that. So thank you, Debbie. Here in this passage, well, let me step back. We started the series a few weeks ago looking at, like, what does it mean? What does a church captivated with Jesus? What is that? It's really asking the question in many ways, like, what is winning your heart? What are you about? What shapes you? What directs you? What establishes, like, who you are? And so what's really going on in there? Within your heart. And here, in John 15, Jesus is making this most incredible claim. It's incredible. It's the last of the seven I am statements. And Jesus declares, in verse 1, you can see it there, he says, I am the true vine. Also, we love crying kids. Like, just so you feel like, oh man, like, it don't bother. And adults that cry. I cry. Like, we're in it together. Yeah, exactly. We'd be lost otherwise. But Jesus says, I am the true vine. He also says God is the vine dresser. Or you could use, you could kind of translate that like farmer. Or I'll probably use gardener today, just so it's a little bit easier to grasp what that is. And we see that Jesus also talks about branches. And like, we'll see who the branches are as the people as we get going. But if you were a person and you were there right with Jesus and you were listening to these words from him, you would comprehend and understand some things that we don't grasp like 2,000 years away from them. One of them is, most of you, I don't know all your backgrounds where you came from, but like, you didn't grow up in an agrarian culture. Meaning, you weren't in great vineyards doing the work. You probably didn't grow up, a lot of you, working in the orchards. And so there's a lot of like understanding and language that is happening that they just understand quickly, like a child would grasp. But for us, if you didn't have that, we miss some of those things. So we got to unpack some of that. Also, like, those listening in, they would have known the Old Testament really well. And so they would have heard some things like, oh, when Jesus calls himself, I am the true vine, that would have raised some eyebrows. Like, wait, what did you just say? Because it really is a bold statement. So, listen, like, unpack particularly, like, I am the true vine. If you go back and you go into the Old Testament, say, the prophet Jeremiah the prophet 600 years before Jesus, and Jeremiah speaking to God's chosen people, Israel, who no longer are worshiping him. They've gone astray. They are enticed by other powers. They are enticed by idols and their own desires and their own wants, and they're off. And so God sends a megaphone in Jeremiah, a prophet, a messenger, to say, come back to me. I love you. There needs to be a course correction. You've got to come back. Hear these words. Jeremiah 2, 21. Yet I planted you a choice vine, God saying to Israel, through Jeremiah, holy, of pure seed. How then have you turned to denigrate and become a wild vine? Or in Jeremiah 5:10, go up through her vine rows and destroy, but make not a full end. Strip away her branches, for they are not the Lord's. This message God sends right through Jeremiah is that God plants the care. This isn't my outline, by the way. This is just looking at Jeremiah's words. God plants the care. Israel has gone astray. There is judgment and correction. And a portion of Israel remains forever. But also pay really close attention to the choice why. Right? That language. These words from God saying Israel is the choice vine. Which is really interesting because Jesus doesn't say Israel is the true vine or choice vine. Jesus is saying he himself is the true vine. What's happening? Like, there's another moment in Scripture where Jesus is saying, look, I didn't come to abolish the law, but to fulfill the law. I'm here to make it more. It's me. It's actually in him. So Jesus is saying, God the gardener planted him. Jesus. A choice vine. Holy, pure seed. This is incredible. Jesus claimed he is God. Like, this isn't Jesus saying, hey, Israel, as a nation, you need to rise up, get your act together, clean this stuff up, and get it figured out. He's saying, I am the true vine. And that word true, I just love, because it means in the Greek, like, a true fact, or it's real. So it's like Jesus saying, I am what is real. I am the true fact. It's me, right? Here. Like, life isn't a random event that we have to figure out and navigate ourselves. We've got to control it all, work to figure it out, all of these things. Like, imagine like, if you're familiar with Ann Arbor, like, you're walking through Nichols Arcade by the Dyack, right, downtown, and someone comes up to you, you don't know him, and they're like, I am the true vine. You know, you'd be like, good for you. Or in my mind, if I was thinking of the illustration, I was like, oh, you're opening another cannabis shop called I Am the True Vine. Like, hey, speak market, man. He may not make it. Like, you're going to think they're just crazy, right? You're going to blow them off. Here's the thing with Jesus. Either he is a madman, or he actually is Israel. He is the true vine. He is the bread of life. He is the light. It is he himself, nothing else. And you've got to wrestle with that. You got to say, like, oh. Like, just, like, he's the one who is the plant. And what's beautiful is you keep looking and studying Jesus, you're like, he's never out of control. He's never wondering, like, this life is a chess game. Like, I've got to make this move, or this person does this, or, like, no. Jesus is never operating like a rabbit. Because he is the point. He is the way. There's no mystery. There's no mystery. Now, I want to get after something right away in the passage. It's kind of the elephant in the passage in some sense, but it's a beautiful truth and reality. Let's look at verses 2 and 6. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away, and every branch that does not bear fruit, he prunes, that it may bear more fruit. Or, in verse 6, if anyone does not abide in me, he is thrown away like a branch, and withers, and the branches are gathered, thrown into the fire. You may hear that and be like, okay, well, I was here last week, and you talked about Jesus from his words and his heart being gentle and loving. His inclination is a God of mercy. That doesn't sound merciful. It seems to contradict, like, who he is. So how do you hold that together? And I've been really grateful for meeting with a group of people people, and there was a guy in there, and he was like, he's wrestling with this. And it was really helpful for me to say, yeah, that is something to wrestle with. It isn't just to walk past it. What is happening here? So I'm really grateful, particularly for Tim Keller's insight on this verse. Tim Keller's late pastor, just amazing man. And he helps unpack that the dried and burned branch is not someone who has had a hard life or has tried to make it and has failed. The dry branch is someone who, and here's an exact quote from Keller now, externally attached to Jesus, but not internally united to Jesus. Meaning, you could be around Jesus. You could even know many of the things Jesus said. You could even memorize a lot of the words Jesus said. Doing the things Jesus said. You aren't actually internally united to Jesus. To use an agricultural term, you weren't grafted in. So the busyness of life, all the things trying to do and get done and to the successes and to just keep going, you gotta keep it up and keep going, showing that you have done enough. This passage isn't saying someone who is weak and struggling isn't there. Actually, the person who is trying to control everything and do everything on their own and wanting to have it all together but unwilling to give up the control, it's the person who's like, I know better. I know what's right. I know how things should go. Which sounds a lot like Israel. We'll figure it out. And they needed, what, a messenger, a prophet to come and say, you don't know. You've gone astray. Jesus is that final prophet that comes and says, there is me. Me, myself, I'm right here. So let's step back for a second, and get a 10,000-foot view of this, at the same time kind of grow in this understanding of agricultural illustration. We've learned the vine dresser or gardener is God's Father. Okay? The gardener, God the Father, wants, from the start, the best fruit. Wants real fruit. The heart of the gardener and the actions of the gardener are all about flourishing of the vineyard. The gardener wants the best fruit. Why would the gardener be like burnt out? That doesn't make any sense. The gardener is literally saying in the passage, like, I want the best fruit. We want real fruit. So that must mean God wants to produce the most real fruit, most beautiful thing ever. He loves the vineyard. Loves the vineyard. Wants to see it flourish. God, to say it in another way from another passage we looked at, God is the most generous master ever. It's his estate. It's his vineyard. He wants to see it go, multiply, and grow beautiful. Fruit, meaning real love. That's what fruit is. Real love. And that fruit comes from the branches. Humankind, me, you, united in the vine, grafted in Jesus. But the truth is, our inclination isn't to just be like, oh yeah, I want to be grafted in. Right? Like, that's not our inclination. We want to figure things out on our own. I got this control. Or we want to make our own beauty. And that comes a lot of times from shame. I'm not enough. Or we can build it better. We'll build a better vineyard. That comes from fear. God isn't who he says he is. We'll build our own. And you see this all throughout the Old Testament, all of these illustrations. And what is God's response to us or his people running amok? To right, us trying to put ourselves together, us trying to figure it out, us saying we know the way. Does he burn the baby down? Are we on pins and needles feeling like, oh no, what's going to happen? No, as Romans 8:32 says, he who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all. How will he also, with his gracious gift, give us all things? You in Christ, Christ came to the runaway humanity that needed to be rescued. And if you even feel like, oh my gosh, am I that dry branch? Is that me? That in itself is proving you're not that dry branch, because you can see it. You realize you need something outside of yourself. So you don't have to worry, am I the branch? No. You don't have to worry. Just the fact that you realize you aren't the way. You can't figure it out. That you need real life. It's a marker to say, oh, you're ready for the nutrients from the law. Just so beautiful. Because here's the reality, right? Nutrients come from what you're tapped into. So if Jesus is the vine and you're the branch, like, you have to get nutrients to produce fruit from that vine. That means that you then are tapped into Jesus, who is in God the Father, the gardener, trying to produce the best vineyard ever. Meaning, then real fruit comes from real nutrients being changed inside you going out. It's not a change from the outside in. That vine dies if it doesn't have real nutrients. Think of it like this. We like to think of, I hear people talk about this all the time, and I get a few things there. You ask for patience. I want to be a more patient person. So what we do, and what we do in the world, or what we even do oftentimes in the church, is say, oh gosh, God, give me more patience. Right? And if I can practice patience, then I will be a more patient. And you actually might be able to go to work and not scream at your boss. Right? You may not just blow up at your kid. You may not have some of these outward explosions of not being patient. But let me ask you, has the inside changed? When you are then angry at your boss or your employees or your child, do you just inside be like, oh, I want crushed. Right? Reese's like, oh, this morning. Is there a bitterness? Is there a hard-heartedness? Is there an anger? Where's the change then? That's that whole thing of, like, the nutrients have to come from the vine that changed the inside out. That's only Jesus. You can only have that if you are actually, as the theologians would say, in union with Christ. Only the good nutrients of Jesus will start to change. And you say, Jesus, I can't just pray, I need patience. If I just need more of you. Because if it's me, I'm bitter. If it's me, I'm angry. If it's me, I'm hurt. If it's me, I'm frustrated. And eventually, those practices will wear down, and the real you will be there. And you'll, right. I was trying to control it. I was trying to manage it. I was trying to get it. Jesus here so beautifully inviting you to say, it's me. The entry isn't your oppressiveness. The entry isn't like looking like something. It's me. And here's what's so interesting to me in this passage, and we'll wrap up here. Jesus doesn't say to us, you're the gardener. There's only one gardener, and it's God. He is the only gardener. That means it's his plant, it's his vineyard, it's his branches, it's his vine, it's all his. But I can tell you, when I start feeling the sense of out of control or fear or shame, I start trying to be the gardener. You can't do that. What are you saying? Like, and I try to come in here. No, we should cut this branch. We should do this. I should, like, right? You start playing gardener. And the beauty of the passage that Jesus says, you're not the gardener. You are not the authority. You don't have to do that. You're not built for that. That's not what I have for you. And also the beauty is, you're not the vine. You're not Jesus. You're not the Savior. And this is why that's so important. Because you can't fix that other person. You can't actually heal that person. You can't be the nutrients that they pull out of to find life and healing. Like, I did youth ministry for a long, long, long time. And I would hear from so many students, crushing weight because they learn the real lives of their friends, and in reality, you want to know what's really happening in the world, what's happening in particularly teen culture. That's what's really good. And all of a sudden, they hear what's happening in their friends' lives, and they feel this incredible weight to be the counselor, to be the healer, to be the fixer. Because who else knows that stuff? Who else will do something? Who else are they going to be honest to? And then they try to take that on, and then you give the reins of a 17-year-old to be a counselor and therapist and psychologist, like, ain't going to go well. You don't have to feel the weight that you have to fix them. Do you know what Jesus asks of you and says what you're made to do? To apply. The word abide means dwell, or to remain. This is beautiful. This is actually, like, the news of this is so incredible because he didn't say, go run and figure it out. He didn't say, go try and control it. He said, look, I know, and you don't even deserve this. Like, you've been running amok all over the place. But because I came, died for you, loved you so deeply, gave up everything so that you can have life, I know that you can't do it in yourself. You need me. And I gave up everything so that you can have this life, so that you could just tap into me. All I'm asking for you is to be with me. Why? Because on our own, as history has shown, not just our cultural moment, humanity will seek power, seek dominance. It will manipulate. It will destroy. Like, you can just look at the last 2,000 years. It's not, it's like nothing new. Man or woman on their own seeks to go. Manipulate. And that is why this theological truth that Jesus is bringing, saying, I am the true vine, if you are not in me, you will not have the nutrients actually. The one command in the passage is love. That's the only thing he says for you, actually an imperative, to do. Love. The fruit of being in Jesus is real love. So the urgency to go and to do isn't a bad one, but it has to start by being like, I got to abide in Jesus. Because the only way to understand that love and to get it is in my insight is being changed to genuinely care for people in real love. Not as I'm the healer, not as I'm the gardener, it's real love. And here's the deal. You don't have to wait for some giant program to do this. You don't even have to wait for some massive new ministry to be started, to like, oh my gosh, when can this happen? You don't have to wait for some new pastor who has it all together from the outside and has this giant platform. You are the branch. He is inviting you to tap into him. And so then you experience that love and you go to work. And you see a workmate. And does that workmate taste you trying to manipulate, control, demand, figure out on your own, fix somebody else? Or do they taste this love that's like, why are you listening to me when you're so busy? And I thank Heidi for sharing that story. Heidi was so busy, but she listened to a coworker. Right? It's all of a sudden a friend calls you and they're just struggling. And you don't feel the need to fix that friend. You become super curious. You listen. And you then invite them to the vine who actually can heal. And so you don't leave that like, oh my gosh, it's on me, how do I figure this out? I'm inviting them to the vine. Or maybe, like, you're a parent, and you have kids, and you're like, oh my gosh, how will these kids, they will taste your love when you abide and dwell in Jesus. Or maybe you're a kid, and you're here, right? You're a teen, and you're here. He's saying, be in me, read my word, pray, cry out to me, abide in me. Like, it's everywhere. Like, that's the beauty. Like, he's inviting you right now, who you uniquely are, to be in someone's life. To love them. That's why he says, he'll know us by our love. Not because I did it, but because I'm tapped into the one who gives power to change in a way. My last thing is, I'm way off my list. But, we want to see real change. You want to go to the gym and you want results. You want to go and find like your work and have it change. You want the measurable. Here's the truth. Real change in someone's life can't come unless there's real heart change in them. And so if you're inviting them to something else that isn't the vine, there's no power in that. If you think branch in itself made you have the power to be able to do something miraculous, like we are the person walking up saying crazy things to us downtown Ann Arbor. Power comes in abiding in faith. It's Jesus. The only power is in Jesus. And you will see things changing in your life and people around you. You're no longer looking out and being like, there's no way that person. There's no way that neighbor, there's no way that coworker, there's no way that child, that relationship, whatever. All due respect, and just hear this in the right way. That's a branch. That's a branch on its own, dried up. Like, I don't have it. Yeah, because you need the vine. You're tapped into the vine and you taste that. There's the end. There's more. And more. Just can't know. God is so generous. This isn't about one. Yes, judgment's real and we are all. It's real and it's a real one. It's not about burning the vineyard down. It's about growing the vineyard. And that comes when you tap in and know that's a beautiful role. Because it matters so much. Because the fruit comes from the branches. you matter to me. Do you know that Jesus? That Jesus, his invitation is, come to me. Don't go fix it. Don't manage it. Don't be the gardener. You're not even the vine. Just come to me. That's the invitation. And he's like, oh, yes. Let me show you.